The following is a presentation of Second City Works, delivered by your earbuds at WGN+.
Welcome to Second City Works, Getting to Yes And. I'm Kelly Leonard, creative advisor for the Second City. We are brought to you by Second City Works, which is the B2B arm of the world-famous Second City Theater. You can find us at secondcityworks.com. And this is more than just a podcast. It's about getting to the yes and moment in your work and your life. The term yes and is a key pillar of improvisation. It's at the front end of creativity. It's about building on ideas and making discoveries together. This is Getting to Yes And.
Working all day for a mean little man with a clip on tie and a rub on tan. He's got me running around the office like a dog around a track. But when I get back home, you're always there to rub my back.
My guest today on Getting to Yes And is Martin Atkins. Martin has spent 3 decades in the music industry. He was the drummer for Johnny Rotten's Public Image Limited in 1979 and went on to perform with Killing Joke, Ministry, and Nine Inch Nails, along with his own band, Pigface. His book, Tour Smart, was released in 2007. Seth Godin said that Tour Smart was one of the best books on the logistics and strategy of street, local, and band marketing. He also wrote Welcome to the Music Business, You're Fucked. And he's got a new book that's going to be coming out soon called Band Smart. He is a noted speaker, and he currently teaches at SAE Chicago. Martin, welcome to Getting to Yes And.
Hey, thanks for having me. I don't have that Seth Godin quote.
You must use it.
I'm going to use the shit out of
yes,
it. I'm putting it on a t-shirt.
That is marketing gold. All right. So I was reading your book, Tour Smart, and I did a little experiment in our offices at Second City Works.
Okay.
I would read passages of the book to my coworkers and then ask them to guess the profession of the person who wrote the book.
Uh-oh.
All right. The responses I got were, here's the order, yeah. CEO, marketing guru, negotiation expert, and ethicist. No one said drummer, and no one said musician.
Wow. I'm having all of these emotions. Mm-hmm. I'm having more emotions on top of that. So, you know, it's Father's Day coming up.
Yeah.
And I just thought about my dad. My dad was a CEO.
Oh, really?
And I was like one of those kids, like, well, okay, well, fuck you, Dad. I'm going to be a drummer. Not only am I going to be a drummer, I'm going to play with Johnny Rotten.
Yeah.
Fuck you. You know?
Yeah.
And here
yeah.
we are. And I quote Dale Carnegie when I speak, and now people think I'm a CEO.
Right.
And an ethicist.
Yeah, yeah.
Holy. I'm trying to think, which passage was that?
Well, I mean, the book, and we'll get to it, because the book has wonderful insights about your life and your working life that I think apply across industries. That was the thing I was realizing. So I'd actually purposefully disguise anything that said anything about music when I was reading it. So I just want to also say this before we get into it, is like, I saw you perform.
Okay.
I saw Public Image Limited on October 23rd, 1982 at the Granada Theater in Chicago. I was 16 years old, and I remember the show providing me with an equal mix of electricity and fear.
Yeah, well, me too.
Okay, good.
It was punk was a dangerous thing in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
It frightened me as an accomplished, technically proficient drummer. The whole lot, because I started playing when I was 9.
Yeah.
So I'm like 17 when punk comes along. Here's a chord. Here's another. Start a band.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no. Here's a chord. Here's another. Practice for 5 years and then think about starting a band, maybe after a lengthy audition process, surely, come on. And so I was frightened by punk, and so you were 16 when you saw that show.
Yeah.
I think I was probably 19 when I played it.
Wow.
Maybe 20.
Yeah.
You know, I joined Pill, I was young.
Yeah.
So, wow.
Yeah.
I ended up, when I moved to Chicago in 88, 89, I ended up moving 5 blocks from the Granada Theater, which is kind of strange to stumble around one day and look up to that I can still see the edifice of the building.
Right, and actually like the Granada was there when you moved here, I think, still,
yeah,
right?
It
hadn't been torn down yet.
Like a cathedral, and I think I went back the next day to take some pictures and they were tearing it down.
And they were tearing it down, yeah.
Which is
only appropriate. So I think you have a really smart take on audiences, which is an increasingly important area the various groups need to have better insight on. And so you were quoted as saying this, the audience has all the power, and those artists who can understand that and pour gasoline on that relationship are succeeding on the radar and under the radar, gaining an audience, building careers, sustaining and growing. Right? I mean, that's it.
I have these, I tell bands all the time, nobody gives a shit about the things that are important to you. Your music, you've got a new song. Who cares? Mm-hmm. There's already enough songs. You're doing a show. Fuck off, you know. Everybody's busy, nobody cares. So if you understand that, and they kind of do, and
yeah.
It's like, you know, when I talk, it's a little bit brutal, mm-hmm. You know. If you accept that that's true, and they're like reluctantly, yeah, well, what are you doing? What are you doing for your audience? You should be going and picking them up.
Right.
Driving them to your show, sitting them down, giving them some beer, maybe pizza, mm-hmm. And after performing whatever for however long they want you to, which is probably less the time than you think, driving them home, turning down the bed, putting a mint on their pillow, giving them hot chocolate, you know. And then I joke, you should be doing your fans' laundry.
Right. Well, this is a brand thing, right? So we were talking to a marketing expert from Coca-Cola who was talking about the famous jingle, you know, I want to give the world a Coke. And the story she has around that was that the guy from McCann Erickson, the advertising executive, was like, they got stranded at Heathrow because they couldn't take off. Everyone was just completely pissed about it. And the next day when he came back, all the people who were so angry were all having Cokes and laughing together. And he's like, I need to sell that. I don't need to sell the Coke. I need to sell the community.
Right.
Right. And that's what you're saying.
And I think the early days of Virgin Airlines, when
sure.
Virgin started, people would come around giving out ice cream. I'm like, oh, my God, mm-hmm. Somebody gave me an ice cream. And it's like you were captive in these seats.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, how much did that cost? Nothing. You
right.
Know?
Right.
And here I am. 15, 20 years later going, oh my goodness, somebody
yeah, right.
gave me an ice cream.
Right.
It's if you, once you get it, it's so totally simple,
mm-hmm.
but it there seems to be a barrier to people actually getting it.
Well, and I think one of the traps of success is that it can separate us from our audiences and we kind of forget the essential thing that got us where we were.
Well, I think only if you aspire, only if you despise your audience and aspire
yeah.
to be separated from your audience. I think the people who succeed are the people who sit until nobody else wants an autograph.
Taylor Swift.
No, nobody else wants to talk to me. Okay, well, I'll go. Because who the fuck am I to say, that's it, we're done.
Yeah.
You know, and there's so many moments in my life where I've done something that seemed perfectly natural, like hanging around outside a show that turned out to not be all ages,
mm-hmm.
and talking to some kids who couldn't get in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 15 years later or 20 minutes later, whatever it is, the karmic payback for that is huge.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely true. I think Tour Smart should be required reading for anyone entering the job market.
Me too. I think it should be. Okay. That's wow. Okay.
Yeah. So you write that the trick is to get inside the building
yep.
and not to be on the outside claiming you're on the set list, which is the best advice I ever got, actually, because I wanted to work in theater, was work in a theater.
Yeah. Doing anything.
Doing anything.
I tell students all the time. So I'm at SAE Chicago. I teach music business. I'm the department chair, so I get to set the curriculum.
Yeah.
And I tell them all the time, you know, don't leave here with your degree thinking you're five rungs up the ladder.
Right.
That's a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if somebody says, we love your resume, we like you, would you come to the House of Blues and clean the toilets? Absolutely.
Yeah.
If you want to do sound or promote, you've got to be in the building first.
Mm-hmm.
And once you're in the building, cleaning the toilets, do a great job. And then you'll hear the fight that leads to the sound guy punching the other guy.
Right.
And there's the vacancy. Or if the fight doesn't happen and the sound guy's really talented, he'll be poached by a touring band, and there's an opportunity too. And the opportunity is in the building in a very short time frame.
Right.
It's not, hey, we're accepting applications over the next 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these things are quick and immediate.
Yeah, another phrase that I think is connected to that you say is shut up, get real, and get in the van. which I also like, because it to our earlier conversation too is don't sit on the sidelines. You can't sit on the sidelines, and that you want to engage yourself and your audience. I mean, it's the space between that is where all the good stuff happens.
Right. So we try and put that into effect in teaching. We have a 16-month program. The last semester is a culminating project, and we make it real. Mm-hmm. So we've done 27 artists at Reggie's Rock Club on the South Side.
Yeah.
We put EDM DJs on the L,
mm-hmm.
which was and a sound system. Mm-hmm. That was unbelievable. We put artists on a double-decker bus. And the beautiful thing is that you see the students like rise up, and there's the adrenaline, which the problem-solving adrenaline that opens the gateways in your mind to solutions.
So you've been brought in by a lot of different organizations to talk about this stuff. At what point did the punk drummer realize he had stuff to say, or did someone else figure that out for you?
Okay. These are not usual questions for me, so I'm thinking.
That's okay.
After Tour Smart.
Yeah.
Honestly, I've got four kids. I live down by the White Sox. I'm like, okay, you know, this is starting to wind down a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I was teaching at Columbia.
Yep.
And went up to Madison and developed the bachelor's program at a place called Madison Media Institute. Like, okay, we're winding down here. You know, we'll do the book. Actually, I started to write my PIL memoirs. I have a bunch of photographs and memorabilia. And then there was a need for this touring book, which mm-hmm. I saw. So I wrote it. Next thing you know, I'm in South America. I'm at Hole in the Sky Festival in Bergen, Norway, which is a black metal.
Wow.
And I'm like, I actually threatened like 800 black metal enthusiasts to, I'm like, let's go in the car park. You know,
I don't think that was a good idea.
Yeah. So, and just as I tell an artist, look, if you're wearing platform boots, a see-through bra, spiky hair, whatever else, exploding fingernails,
mm-hmm.
in Times Square on New Year's Eve, nobody cares. Mm-hmm. You wear that shit to the library
mm-hmm.
and create an event, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess I took my own advice, which sometimes I do, and the first time I said fuck at an academic event, oh, okay. That was kind of punk.
Yeah.
You know? And so it seemed quite... And then I started throwing things at people. I did a scratch and sniff, a packaging lecture. I had scratch and sniff, white vinyl, blueberry scratch and sniff, white vinyl, 7-inch single.
Mm-hmm.
That was part of my demonstration of like cool packaging. PIL's metal box being a piece as well. And I thought, well, what can I do now? Everybody's like in the mood blueberry mm-hmm. scent. And I just started throwing packages of muffins. And people are like, what the fuck is going on? And now I just do it. I don't do, whether I do the packaging lecture or not, I just start throwing
stuff
at people. I almost hit the governor of Oklahoma in the head with a baseball-sized muffin, but her Secret Service guy like snatched it out of the air. So I just start to play with these ideas. And then... when I lecture, it causes me to look, think, and look.
Yeah.
People ask me to come and lecture about different things, so I think and I look. And lecturing now is a place where I put some things together.
Yeah.
Not just beforehand, but actually while I'm delivering. Sometimes I'll stop and I'll go, oh, shit.
Yeah.
You know? So I start to, it's my learning mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
So I put this stuff together, present it, and I'm listening to myself. Mm-hmm. Present the stuff and trying to have some fun. And along the way, you come up with this, like, well, why isn't class more entertaining?
Right.
There's obviously a pathway here. When people are smiling, their defenses are down. You can inject a a maggot of knowledge into the brain and wait for it to hatch, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I started to look into that, and the more I speak, the more I like to speak. And it's, you know, this year, not so much because I was finishing the book and working on some curriculum stuff, and it's the 25th anniversary of my band.
Mm-hmm.
But some years I'm like everywhere, every weekend. It's crazy.
There's a great improv phrase, which is try not to invent, try to discover, which is kind of what you're talking about. But the thing is, it's not just great for the artist, it's great for the audience. They love doing that together. So, you know, I go out and talk to organizations all the time. And when I first started doing it, I made the assumption that they wanted the corporate version of Second City or improv. Not interested in that at all. The whole and it makes perfect sense when you think about it. They would have called the corporate guy if they wanted that.
Right.
They want something a little more authentic.
Right. I somewhere on my schedule is Madison Ruby.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, what's this Ruby? Is it a club? No, it's a programming language. I'm like, well, what the fuck? What are they asking me to talk about? And I think this will be my third time doing it. I've spoken about like punk rock.
Right.
I don't know what I spoke about the second time. I love that, you know.
Yeah.
But how boring to be at a programming conference. It's just people like, and the interesting thing about code is, nothing.
Nothing. Nothing interesting about code.
So let's talk about other stuff.
Right. Okay, I found in reading Tour Smart, you talk about contracts. And I love this because you say there's no such thing as a guarantee. Right. And you say, here's your the only closest thing you get to a guarantee are relationships and leverage. And leverage is selling tickets.
Right.
Right.
That's it.
That explains all of business.
Right.
In my mind.
It's like, it doesn't matter. I've had an inch thick contract. I've actually had 2 inch thick contracts.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter.
No.
When it comes down to it. Without the leverage,
mm-hmm.
intent,
mm-hmm.
ability, which could be finances or just mindset.
Right.
To enforce something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had periods of my life where I've enforced stuff because I just felt like it.
Right.
You know, which has turned out to be useful in some areas. And I've had times that's like, this is going nowhere. This is just, I don't need this nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to wave goodbye. And to teach people anything other than that is fraudulent.
Right. And the relationship part is so important. You're also quoted as saying you should be nicest to the person you think you have the least reason to be nice to.
Yeah.
So true.
I wish someone had told me that 20 years ago. I got into a fight with this guy backstage at the Olympic Auditorium in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
It was probably on the same tour that you saw.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, we were 1 6-pack short.
Right.
You know, and we'd probably already had 80.
Yes.
You know. What the hell? Bring me. Who's the responsible? So here I am, this 20-year-old asshole.
Yeah,
getting into a fight with like an 18-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm.
So it turns out that was Kevin Lyman, who went on to create the Warped Tour.
Yeah,
Taste of Chaos. Every tour that I might ever want to be in any genre of music, I want to.
No,
you know. And so there's a lesson right there. Now, fortunately, I end up on stage with Kevin. Maybe 8 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, New Music Seminar in New York.
Mm-hmm.
We're on this panel. And I'm like, well, this is just terrible.
Because
I am an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they start the questions, I'm like, look, stop.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 800 people at the old Ritz in New York.
Yeah.
I'm like, look, stop. Before we go any further, I'm going to apologize. I was a complete prick. And I can't do anything except stand up. And just apologize for being a complete asshole.
What'd he say?
We've been friends ever since.
Oh, yeah.
I was on his bus for 2 weeks on the Warped Tour. Just let me go out and like speak to people randomly. And
that's great.
And that was just joyful.
That's great.
But I think sometimes we're assholes out of insecurity. And it's no excuse. You just have to understand that.
Mm-hmm.
How do people normally act in this circumstance? And you think, because you've heard the stories of rock stars, that you're an asshole. And you don't have to be. It's actually the opposite.
So when did that dawn on you? When did you figure that out?
Oh, God. Late.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of drinking at first, which just masks everything.
Right.
You know. So my learning curve was not steep. I had over 16 years sober, which I think helped. And my dad died. And I'm like, oh, fuck this.
Right.
You know. So my learning curve was late and steep and fortunately continues.
Yes. Yeah. No. You know? That's the lifelong learners. It's just crucial. It's crucial to remain curious because, I always say if someone thinks they know it all, that's the last person I want to talk to.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, teaching and lecturing has helped me. Ken Lopez over at USC said, would you come and talk to us about the socioeconomic backdrop to the punk rock revolution? I'm like, fuck, okay. What is a socioeconomic backdrop? That was huge. And at the end of that lecture, I said, well, there you go. That's punk. It's never happened before. It was unique and it will never happen again. And Ken asked the class, what does that remind you of? And I actually said to the head of the music business program at USC, excuse me, how can it remind anybody of anything? Mm-hmm. It's unique. It's never happened before. Never happened again. And meanwhile, the students put their hand up. They're like, oh, Delta Blues. I'm like, what? Hmm. And so I start looking into Delta Blues. I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah.
There's some parallels here. So, sometimes I learn in kind of unexpected places and inconvenient unexpected places that make me look ridiculous, but that's fine.
So, what's your take on? Because you were a kid at the heart of the punk movement, and people try to co-op that, right? Advertisers all the time.
The Sex Pistols credit card being the most recent example.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Even if you buy heroin using the Sex Pistols credit card, it's still not punk. There's nothing you can do to make it punk.
That is so true. I can't believe that.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling. I have some fun with that. There's also an Axe body wash called Anarchy.
Really?
Oh. Yeah, and a deodorant spray. So, of course, that's part of one of my lectures.
So tragically inauthentic.
Yeah, I spray people with Anarchy. Anybody in the mood for Anarchy? You're like,
you just spray it.
Yeah.
Oh wow, that's terrible!
What was your question?
I was just talking about Well, I think I know the answer, right? People who co-opt that movement. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. It's silly.
Yeah,
you're probably over getting angry about it.
Well, I don't know. I think the most shocking part of it to me was when John Lydon, Johnny Rotten, people said he's on a commercial selling butter in England. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, it's obviously another Johnny Rotten, And no, it's John selling Country Life English butter. He's gone from being despised and stabbed on the street,
right,
to selling butter. And my mom and dad will comment, oh, he's on the television again.
Wow.
That was the most shocking moment. And so, the credit card is just hilarious.
Wow, I didn't realize he was selling butter.
Yeah. And the sales went through the roof, and he asked for so much money to do another one, they told him to fuck off.
Okay. Is he still on that train? Is he commercializing stuff?
He's entering a different
phase
now, yeah.
Wow, that's fascinating. So when I started working at Second City, and this is 1988, we didn't have email. There were no mobile phones. We had an answering machine that took reservations.
Yeah.
With so many changes over so many years, it's easy to think that what was relevant back then is no longer relevant today. But you wrote, the medium changes, the essentials haven't. Core content, a message, an idea, a spark, a vision. Still believe that?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a debate in class. Will the 8-track cartridge come back? I'm like, who cares? I released a Pigface album on an 8-track cartridge just to be difficult.
Yeah.
I think the more people are on the internet, the more valued a postcard with a stamp and handwritten is. Mm-hmm. People are like, what the fuck is this? It's a postcard. And what do you do with that postcard? Take a picture, put it on your Instagram. Same deal, So it's still, there's a curve and you need to stay at a certain point away from the largest point of that curve, behind it, so far behind that you're ahead, or ahead of it enough that you're actually ahead of it.
Right. But still, content is king.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's another thing that I love this that you said, which is vibe trumps tuning, content, song structure. Vibe trumps the warmth of the bass. If all you're about is recording your bass through a neat preamp directly to tape, that's not going to save a song. Vibe will save a song. Vibe will excuse all kinds of horrifying technical mistakes because vibe wins. That's what punk did. It said you question everything.
Yeah. Wow. I'm it's nice to hear these quotes back at me. Yeah, if you so there's an external vibe, yeah. But there's an internal vibe. If you've got the belief in yourself, you can carry that.
Mm-hmm.
You can carry that. I've seen performances on stage in the worst situations, and that have resonated more than great performances in great situations.
Sure.
You know, if you've got the bottle, I guess mm-hmm. you call it in England, if you have the internal megawatts of light inside of you to carry that off, that's it.
No, absolutely. And what I also love about that is when you acknowledge that, well, there's a term in improv called make mistakes work for you. It's like that the mistake is an opening. That's fine. Use that. We're imperfect human beings. And when the audience sees that, they know it. They're seeing themselves in you. And then this idea, I think, of, you know, talent being able to know who they are, right? So it's that internal fortitude, external connection.
Right. Yeah. So there's that. You could think... sometimes, what am I trying to say? That I'm happy on stage for an hour talking about anything
mm-hmm.
because I'm not trying to be somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think a part of me thought a few years ago, look, I've done enough that I don't give a fuck.
Right.
You know, I just got I got a Grammy for some work I did with Nine Inch Nails. I just got my platinum disc.
Mm-hmm.
I put it on the chair at home, like,
yeah.
Da-na-na.
Yeah, sure.
So family would see it, like, okay, everybody's going to see it when they come in. I'll just leave it there.
Yeah.
Like accidentally.
Yeah.
Here's my fucking platinum disc. So I was in the garden. I don't know what I was doing. I come downstairs and there's like a bag from TJ Maxx, two coats slung over.
It was just no one like, gave a shit about you.
It's like, I'm like, whoa. You know?
Yeah.
So I think that there's, but what that comes down to is if you can just be comfortable, which mm-hmm. that's a trick right there.
Yeah.
If you can be comfortable, then everything's fine.
Yeah.
It's once you start pretending to be,
right.
When it all goes wrong, it unravels and it's, you know.
Well, this is the thing about improvisation as a practice, which is mostly about getting people being comfortable with looking foolish and modeling that over and over so that they can take wild chances. And then the great byproduct of that is when you're really good and then you become really famous, you're not an asshole. Because you've learned all this stuff of like, oh, we're all just human beings. We're in it together. My job is to make you look good. Your job is to make me look good. And that's, you know, it's an astounding ratio of the people who come out of Second City who are actually nice people, like 90%.
Well, so that's also punk.
Yeah.
So there's a band called The Undertones, and a radio guy called John Peel gave them the money to make their first recording. Teenage Kicks was the 7-inch single. They didn't have enough money for a sleeve.
Yeah.
So they Xeroxed some posters and folded them up, which I just love that they did that.
Mm-hmm.
But on the back cover, it says, The Undertones are shit. I'm like, oh my goodness. They just took every critic... They just took all the steam away.
Yeah.
Like some critics are like, well, in my opinion, I think that they're not very good. In fact, they're shit. Like, yeah, fuck off. We said that 5 weeks ago. In fact, it's on our 7-inch single.
Right.
Come up with something new. The empowerment of that.
Yeah.
Is huge.
Yeah.
If you can, you know, so you can, there are things you can do to push yourself into that situation. You can just say The Undertones are shit on your own record. And you've it's what a great defense.
I was at Longman and Eagle having lunch with my family, and I looked on the table, and there was a card, and it was on the front of the card was a terrible Yelp review for Longman and Eagle. It was like the best thing.
Oh, there's a guy who does that.
Mm-hmm.
They'll give you free food. The worse the review, he's trying to say, look, Yelp is actually a scam.
Yeah.
And you have to pay to be a part of the membership to remove the bad reviews. It doesn't matter. And his reviews are just fantastically atrocious.
Yes.
He's doing fine.
I love it. All right. So we're coming to the end of the podcast. And,
oh, what
and,
a bummer.
I know.
Normally it's like, and what was the, how did you get the drum sound on this? But
yeah, so well,
this
yeah,
is fun.
I went,
this
I,
is a lot of fun.
Good. I went a different way. But what I ask all our guests is, and this seems like it'd be relatively easy for you, but who knows, which is what's a moment in your life where you might have said no, or you probably would have said no, but instead you chose not to say yes, but say yes and to something.
Oh, does it need to be a yes and? Or
no, it can be
yes?
A no. It can be a yes. It can
okay.
be any of those.
So I hope this might be a long story.
Go for it.
I don't know.
Doesn't matter. We got time.
So this is my learning curve. I've been to Norway 5 times now speaking. Mm-hmm. And the last time I was there, I did 10 events. I'm at some event. I don't even know where it was. What an amazing fucking country.
Yeah.
But so there's a reception, a dinner for all of the people participating in this thing. And everything in Norway, there's lots of black metal, mm-hmm. you know. And I'm thinking, my tolerance for black metal is low. My tolerance for talking about black metal is lower than that.
Yeah.
However, there's this equation where the quality of the Mexican food that's been prepared. See, okay, we'll go. And so I sit down at this table with a bunch of these long-haired, obviously black metal guys. And I just like a condescending asshole. I'm like, so, you know, what's going on in your black metal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And this guy's like, well, we just played. I'm like, yeah, of course you did. Yawn, bore, you know, mm-hmm. you just played a black metal gig. Tell me something new. I didn't say that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, we played the show, the side of a harbor. I'm like, oh, on the side of a harbor. That's kind of like an outdoor concert. It's like, no. We were facing the harbor as these tall ships came towards us with their blaring their horns. I'm like, what are you, were they trying to get you to stop? It's like, no. This guy had said, wanted to write a symphony with my band. His band was called Enslaved, performing this thing that he'd written. And he was interested in the increasing collision mm-hmm. of the horns on the tall ships with this really loud black metal. I'm like, what the fuck? How on earth did you get this gig? He's like, well, always say yes to everything. I'm like, fuck. You know? And the guy was Ivar Bjornsson, the lead singer from Enslaved, which will freak out anybody mm-hmm. in the black metal community. So that becomes one of my slides.
Mm-hmm.
Always say yes to everything. You know,
yeah.
Dale Carnegie says this and quote this, quote that, boom, boom, boom. So it was one of my slides for 3 years.
That's awesome.
And so I'm at South by Southwest last year.
Uh-huh.
Actually, at South by Southwest EDU.
Okay.
So I've done South by 9 times, mm-hmm. but I did the educational thing as well. So I speak, and it was, you know, in terms of an audience, it was interesting. Mm-hmm. Bunch of academics. I say, fuck, I'm throwing muffins. They're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
It was like the first time they'd see the musical Hair, you know.
Yeah,
like,
right.
I I didn't have to get naked, just throwing some muffins and saying,
that was enough.
Like, oh my God. Right. So it was unfair. But it was a long day. I flew in that morning. I was very nervous. I get, thankfully, still get nervous, you know.
Hmm.
And, I sweated through my shirt. You know, it was Austin, Texas. I was fucking exhausted. And I get back to the hotel, which is just across from the convention center. I press the button, and I saw like 5 people, you know, off to the side. They recognize me like as the crazy guy with mm-hmm. the muffin. And there's a conversation. The guy comes over. It's like, excuse me. And I kind of reach for my pen, like the prick that
yeah.
I am.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll sign your
yeah,
metal
right.
box, right? And he said, look, we've loved your thing. I'd love to take you out to dinner on us, you know? And I'm like, and I was like that.
Yeah.
No, because Shy Martin says no.
Mm-hmm.
I want to just go to my room. I've seen a bunch of people. I actually met the mayor of Austin on the, mm-hmm. like, took a selfie. And I had Shy Martin had enough. And I'm like, and I saw my slide in my head. And I'm like, yes, let me go and change my shirt.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be right back down. And I changed my shirt as quick as I could. But I was conscious of like, you're not going that fast. Are you having trouble with this button?
Right.
Subconsciously, you mm-hmm. fucking shy asshole.
Mm-hmm.
And I got downstairs just as they were getting into an Uber. Like, oh, great. We didn't think you were going to come. and I had the most amazing dinner. It was, we went to some sushi place I'd never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
I swear it was some kind of $220 a person sushi experience, fixed price.
Wow.
Like, and that was great, but the it turns out they were Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
The guy was responsible for 16,000 students, and we had a four-hour conversation and amazing food.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as I think I said at the beginning, sometimes it takes me a while to learn from my own fucking slides, you know. But the word no actually stuck in my throat.
Right.
And I said yes.
Thank you for coming to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I loved it.
Great. This is Second City Works, Getting to Yes And. You can find us at WGNplus.com. You can stream us on the WGN Plus app, or you can find us on iTunes. See you next week.